Are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 89, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin, coming to you from Chicago, Illinois, where it is damn cold tonight. Oh, God, it's cold. You know, we had actually had a pretty reasonable weekend this weekend, and the last week, of course, it's wintertime, and you kind of expect it to be cold, but it is bitter outside right now, and probably in the single digits tonight. I got up this morning to go to work, and it was 18 degrees, yeah. So those of you who live in warmer climates are probably laughing about now. But that's okay, because I get to laugh for the most of the rest of the year when it is so gorgeous up here and is so sweltering hot in other places. But you know what? I like it cold, and I think I've said that on the show before. At any rate, that is completely off topic, because we're really here to talk about Thor. And yeah, we're going to be continuing on along our merry way here with the end of the Walt Simonson run. So let's just go ahead and move on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
Indeed, and today we are going to be covering Thor number 377. Has a cover date of March of 1987. Cover price on this puppy is 75 cents. Cover art is by Walt Simonson and shows Thor apparently defeated, laying on his back on the ground, and he's being loomed over by this armored figure, and this guy only has one arm. That's one of the first things you notice about him. He's got this really gaudy sort of magenta, red, and yellow armor. Can't really quite figure out what's supposed to be going on here, other than the fact that he's about to smash Thor with a giant pink mallet. And to make it worse is that this giant pink mallet has a bunch of balls on it. Yeah, it is as bad as it sounds like, though significantly less phallic to look at than it is to talk about. Anyway, looming up behind this gaudy warrior beast thing are a army of purple armored figures with spears, including some really, really long spears. Very dynamic sort of cover. I wouldn't say it's one of Simonson's best. In particular, there's something really, really wonky about this character's hand. It looks like it's backwards or being held funny or something, and I can't find anything actually wrong with it structurally, so I think it's just maybe very Kirby-esque in the way that the hand is being drawn and the way it's being held in the picture. And it bothers me a little bit because it doesn't quite look right for some reason. Anyway, I can't quite put my finger on it. No pun intended. Just kidding, folks. The pun is always intended. But, you know, hey, even Simonson's worst covers are still better than a lot of other people's best. We open up to the splash page where we have the title of the story, This Hollowed Armor. The writer is Walter Simonson. Art is by Sal Buscema. Lettering is by John Workman. Coloring is by Max Scheel. The editor is Ralph Macchio, and the editor-in-chief is Jim Shooter. And we are given a splash page here of a bunch of elves, dark elves, because this is Svartalfheim, the home of the dark elves. And they are being burst back by this big explosion that's going crack-a-wham. And there are elves flying everywhere. Just what you want to see on the first page of a comic. Now, you recognize these people. These are the people that were ruled over by Malekith. So just keep that in mind as we go into the story. So they all have the sort of grayish hair. Although I guess some of them have brown hair, but most of them have this sort of slate gray hair and chalky white skin. And a lot of them are dressed in green, so you know they're evil. But something has actually burst through the gates of Faerie, and they're going flying, and we have somebody kind of getting up off the floor, and it's going, "Incredible! The portal between our land and the realm of the mortals has been destroyed, broken beyond repair! But who could have done this thing? Surely no enemy can stalk these halls without our knowledge! Do you feel it? Again, the ground trembles with anticipation!" And another explosion with a wham, and they're like, "Another portal shatters! What can we do? Follow Wyrmwood, Dark Warriors, to the Great Hall!" Now, you remember Wyrmwood was Malekith's right-hand man back in the day. "The Mirror of Finvarra will tell us what we need to know. Deep within its silvery depths lies the power to pierce the veil of the mortal realm." And it's a cosmic voyeuroscope, and big yellow gemstone-looking thing set into the wall, and a little bit of like a Kirby space image on it. It's like the screensaver is like Kirby space. So Wyrmwood is doing whatever he needs to do, and he's like, "Already the vision begins to coalesce, revealing a smith, a great blacksmith working the terrible bane of elves, iron. But the picture is distorted almost beyond reading." And we see that it's a glowing yellow character. He's got a hammer in one hand, and he's bashing on a piece of metal. Basically, sort of a, you know, blacksmith. I mean, that's what a blacksmith looks like. And he has this sort of weird skull-like face. But it's all in shadow, so you really can't make out what's going on here. And so Wyrmwood is trying to get the image to clear up. He's, you know, jiggering on the rabbit ears or whatever this thing has.
"Let the vision speak more clearly. Show us the answer we seek."
And we then see a clearer image, and it's somebody who is dressed in sort of a steelworker's outfit. And of course, we recognize it as Thor because he's got this sort of pointy shoulders like his costume has. And he's like,
"Behold, a mighty steel foundry in the mortal metropolis of Pittsburgh. Even now, the smith smites the perilous metal."
And the elves are like, "'Tis beyond belief. The Mirror of Finvarra itself hath been shattered. What could do such damage? Iron has always existed on Earth, yet never posed such a threat."
"Did you not understand what you saw? 'Twas no ordinary metal in the forge, nor an ordinary smith at work. 'Twas the god of thunder, Thor himself. And he is forging nothing less than Asgardian steel. Of all elf banes, the deadliest. With each blow, another portal from Svartalfheim to Midgard will shatter. Should he complete the forging, the power of such iron may well seal Fairyland off from the mortal world forever."
Well, if you remember back in the days they're talking about Malekith and all that, it seemed like there was only one left. So, I mean, Anyway, I don't think they really said.
"We must stop it. Sound the battle cry. Call the warriors to arms. We ride for Earth."
"But Wyrmwood, we faced the Thunder God once in the past, and we were no match for his fury. How shall we defeat him now that he holds our death in his hands?"
"We must summon the one whom even the Dark Elves fear. He alone can stand against the Iron, as none of our other kindred. We must summon Grendel."
A Grendel. Ooh, yes. Remember Crispin Glover as Grendel in Beowulf, yeah? Well, apparently the same character, though certainly in a different venue at this point. And so they all start heading down in the cave. I guess they're going to go wake up Grendel. And he's like,
"Summoning Grendel may unleash a power that will doom the Dark Elves as surely as any iron of the Thunder God's forging. 'Tis even said that Grendel came back from the dead, or worse, that he may still be dead."
"Those are tales, lost forever in the depths of time, Bitterhand. Who knows the truth of them any longer?"
And Wyrmwood comes to a giant gong, which looks amazingly like it's made out of iron. And he bangs it and it goes, gong! And we see a shadowy figure starting to head down a very tight-looking tunnel. And he's like,
"Whether we call Grendel back from the dead or simply from the depths of his unknown lair, what does it matter? What is true is that Thor threatens us here and now, and Grendel may be our only salvation."
So basically, they're only acting to protect themselves. You know, Thor is actually really going to cause them harm if he keeps forging this, whatever he's forging, in a steel mill in Pittsburgh, which kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? Yeah, I seem to recall Thor being in a steel mill in Pittsburgh sometime in the past. But anyway, we shift scenes at that point to Earth, and we're, it's actually a few days earlier than the scene that we've just viewed, and Thor is in the hospital, and he's laying in a hospital bed, and he's got his armored arm, remember, the armor that Tony Stark made for him, and he was checked out by a doctor, and this doctor is saying, well, that's the extent of it, Thor. Several ribs badly cracked, some bruising, and I gather your left arm's broken as well. We reset everything and taped it, but you're going to have to be out of commission for at least 6 to 8 weeks. And I'd like to keep you here for observation for a few days as well.
Believe me, Dr. Kelly, I'm grateful to you and to the paramedics who brought me here. But arrest is quite out of the question, as is my staying here. The events that precipitated my visit here will only be repeated, probably with increasing frequency. My presence will only disrupt the hospital more than you can know. My enemies have gathered for the kill, and I nearly let them win in my despair. Yet that despair is the greatest enemy I have ever faced.
Yeah, well, whining will do that to you.
And I will conquer it, or renounce forever, heritage of the God of Thunder.
Promises, promises.
May Odin grant me the strength.
And we then cut to, apparently 2 days later, and Thor walks into the offices of Damascus Steel Incorporated. And there's a, you know, sort of pencil pusher guy, you know, manager of the shop or whatever, and he's sitting at a desk. And Thor comes in, he's like,
I got your cable, Thor. Frankly, I could hardly believe it. Business is lousy. But even so, taking over the entire facility for a week is an expensive proposition. I was a steel worker in a hard hat before I ever sat down behind a desk. And I've never forgotten how you reforged your hammer here once out. See, it's right going right back. Go back to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 21, where I talk about that issue.
I believe that Thor had broken his hammer in a fight with the Destroyer, the first appearance of the Destroyer.
That's why I agreed to see you. But can even a Thunder God afford that kind of expense?
And Thor hands over a certified check.
Says, the certified check from the Bank of Switzerland should satisfy you on that account.
And the guy looks at it, he's like, wow.
Huh. The gods, Mr. Braden, have dealt with mortals on a cash-and-carry basis for a long time, and the Rheingold is more than a simple ring of doom in the operas of Wagner.
And we can see that Thor's in pain here,
and he goes, "Arg!" And the guy's like, "Thor, what's going on?" It's like, "'Tis nothing. 'Tis merely a minor twinge."
Thor's thinking to himself, the time is running out, and though his broken ribs are tightly taped against movement, every minute brings excruciating pain. He needs to be on with his task and be successful in order to face his enemies. And we then shift scenes to sometime later, now probably not too far later, and Thor is dressed in a hard hat and in overalls, and there's other steel workers around, and you know, he's doing something with one of these giant beakers full of molten iron, and there's other steel workers here, and he says, "What words, Shlovsky?"
"We finished tapping the furnace, Thor, and the ladle is full. All the slag's in the thimble, and we're ready to pour the raw steel into the molds."
"Well done. Begin the teaming," which is the pouring, according to the footnote here.
And they begin pouring molten steel into the molds, and Thor's warning everybody to stay away. And he starts to summon lightning down, and you know, this is some sort of an enchantment to forge the steel, and you have to put the magic in the steel, and maybe this is why the steel is hurting the elves so much, is because this got this magic. And lightning is striking, going crack-a-thrum! And Thor has a red glowing ingot of steel here. It looks like he poured the whole damn beaker of steel into this mold, and all he got is like this thing's like the size of a box of, I don't know, baking powder or something. The steel worker is saying,
"Geez, look at that ingot. It's glowing like it's about to explode." "In truth, 'tis the result of the immortal energies confined within the mortal metal. Gather your fellows and withdraw."
And he's like, "No problem, Thor. We're out of here.
The mortal does not live who could withstand the concussion of the forging I must do now."
And he grabs the ingot in the sort of, I guess they're calipers, pliers. They're giant big calipers. And he begins hammering on it with Mjolnir. And he's thinking to himself, even though banging on this metal is bringing agony to him, he must succeed. Because if he doesn't succeed, well, you know, he's going to go to hell. Because he's got the brittle bones, and they kind of explain that whole thing. Anyway. So then we shift scenes back to Asgard, where we have Heimdall and Amora, the Enchantress. And they're standing on the Rainbow Bridge like they've never left. And they're still talking, you know. And Heimdall's saying, "It must be difficult, Amora, to be so lonely, either in laughter or in anger."
"Do not seek to appease me, Heimdall. You can carry me off forcibly from my home in the midst of my mourning for the executioner. You humiliated me before Baldur himself. Is there no limit to the scandalousness of your behavior?"
And Heimdall's like, "Yeah, what do you want me to do? Your very history is a measure of scandal. Yeah, she's done a lot of evil things. You are too bright and beautiful to waste your tears on empty regret. Better to live now and regret nothing later."
"I find, Heimdall, that you make it very difficult to stay angry with you. But did you have to carry me off as though I were a cask of mead?"
"I thought it the appropriate action, Enchantress. The mead seemed ready for tasting."
And Amora kind of gets dizzy or something and starts to fall back. And Heimdall's like, what's going on?" And she's like,
"'Tis nothing. A momentary dizziness assails me. I shall be all right. I feel as though... Heimdall, help me!"
And she almost falls over the edge of the broken Rainbow Bridge. And Heimdall's freaking out. He's like, "Amora!" So we shift scenes back to Pittsburgh, and Thor is still hammering on this metal here. And we find out now that he's actually making a suit of armor, and it'll allow him to cheat Hela's curse. But he notices that the piece of metal that he's been hammering on, which is kind of this weird triscale shape, I fail to see how this would fit into any piece of armor, though apparently Thor, being an expert armor smith, would actually know this kind of thing. How Thor is an armor smith, I have no idea. But he's thinking to himself, "What's this? The finished metal has suddenly ceased to glow, as though some enemy has entered within the compass of its virtue." And he is attacked by armored figures, and apparently these are the Dark Elf troops. They're coming to stop him. And they're like, "Death to Thor! Slay the destroyer of our realm!
Hurry before the terrible iron weakens us beyond fighting!"
And Thor's like, "The dark warriors of Svartalfheim! Stand back, you are overmatched!"
And he rips off the overalls and the hard hat, which is interesting. It's funny, his hard hat has a mask on it, and it's not like protective goggles. It looks just like a mask, like a superhero mask, which is kind of weird. Anyway, Thor rips off the clothing, which looks like it should be harder than it was. And he goes, "'Tis no faint heart you face here, but the God of Thunder.
We know who threatens us, villain, and we have come for your head."
And Thor goes crash and smashes his hammer on the ground. He says, "Give it up, dogs. Hela herself has forestalled you." And he's hit over the head with a spear with a ring. And he's apparently pretty hard because he's saying, "My skull rings with the blow. Curse Hela for her meddling. There is no way in which I can defeat so many foes here and now. I must flee to fight another time." And he turns to leave, and there is a shadowy figure blocking the way out. And it's the guy from the cover, though he's in shadow, you can't see, but he only has one arm, just like the guy in the cover. And he goes, "Flight is impossible, Thor. The Thunderer dies here this day." And Thor's like, "What? Tell Hela that Grendel sends the son of Odin to sup with her when you greet the death goddess in the cold horners of Hel." What apparently Grendel doesn't know is that Hela has made it impossible for Thor to die. So he's kind of being overly boastful here. And Grendel's kind of hobbling forward like a toddler. And Thor's like thinking to himself, "What? Surely that monster of ancient legend no longer walks the earth. No matter now. Already he swings his great war club with the fell eye of a warrior born. Should it strike me, surely the God of Thunder will fall. My timing must be perfect." And Thor goes to deflect the war club with his hammer, and it strikes the hammer with a karhram. And apparently it's like when you hit a hammer against something like concrete or the road, or you know how that works? You get the really bad vibration through the hammer and it hurts. And apparently that's happened to Thor now. He's like, "Arg, my hand! The force of Grendel's blow hath shattered it." The elves are like, "He hath dropped his hammer! Forward, warriors! Now your time has come!" And Thor is still fighting, though, even though he broke his hand. And he's like, "Stay back, denizens of the dark!" And he's kicking over, like, the scaffolding on them. And like, "Though Hela hath robbed the son of Odin of his fighting prowess, he hath retained his fighting heart. And no mere dwellers of faery shall bring Thor down to his doom."
and he starts pouring the liquid metal. I guess that's he kind of jostled the beaker or whatever it is of the metal, and it's pouring around, and you know, they don't like iron, and this is molten iron, and they're running away. It's like, beware! Thor has released the deadly molten iron! Flee! Grendel, help us! And we then shift scenes back to Asgard, and specifically to the castle of Loki. And we see that Loki's castle is surrounded by this tempestuous snowstorm, due, of course, to Loki's machines and so forth. And he's you remember, he's trying to hide the land of the giants from Heimdall's vision so that he doesn't see that they are recovering their strength. And so, the giants are standing around in Jotunheim, and they say,
"Look at us. Once we were giants who could shake the earth. Now, thanks to Baldur, we tremble in the shadow of the trees and hang our heads in shame. Will Loki keep his word, Grundroth? Will he restore us to our former size and glory?"
"Loki's hatred of the gods has never been greater. He will help us. And once he has, we will repay his kindness, as such a traitor deserves."
And we shift to Loki's secret laboratory, blah. And he's like,
"I am ready. A translucent spheroid projected to Midgard will initiate the final stage of my grand design."
And he's got this big Kirby gun-looking thing, and he shoots out, apparently, a translucent spheroid, though we can't really see it, probably because it's translucent.
"And when it is complete, the destruction of Asgard will begin."
And we see a building on Earth. We're supposed to recognize this building somehow. And it has actually, if you've been reading other Marvel comics during this era, you will recognize it as the headquarters of X-Factor, which, of course, at this point was also being written by Walt Simonson. So, hence the guest appearance here. And we go inside the building, and we have members of X-Factor here, the Beast and Iceman. And they're just kind of chilling out in the headquarters, and they give us kind of a little bit of exposition of what's going on in their book. It's like the Beast is saying, "Now that the Morlocks have returned to the alley, X-Factor headquarters seems a tranquil, even unexciting place. At least Scott will be home tomorrow. What do you say we do a quick workout?"
"Listen, Hank, so much has happened, Angel and Scott and stuff. I'm wondering, maybe Mask was right about us. I just want to go off somewhere and think."
"Come on, Bobby, it'll do you good."
And there's this translucent spheroid that suddenly appears around Bobby, a.k.a. Iceman, and it goes poof, and he is gone. And the Beast doesn't really notice what happened. He turns around and is like, "Bobby? Wow, gone already. Maybe a guy that fast on his feet doesn't need to work out." And we shift scenes back to Asgard, where Bobby has reappeared, and he is kind of strapped into this giant Stargate-looking ring thing. Sort of magnetized to this thing, apparently. We get a little bit of exposition, but exercise is perhaps the furthest thing from Bobby Drake's mind at that moment, as he suddenly finds himself a long way from home.
"What? I can't move!"
And Loki is sitting there behind his high-tech scientific chair, and he's like,
"Iceman, is it not? I certainly hope so, or all my careful planning would go awry."
"Who are you? What do you want?"
"Forgive me, but we shall have to chat some other time. My friends have been waiting so long. Perhaps you'd like to change to something more comfortable."
"Oh, my."
I'm kind of wondering if Iceman has never met Loki before. Though maybe he hasn't. I don't know. I'm sure that Walt Simonson would not be so sloppy. But anyway, so Iceman finds himself icing up uncontrollably, and he's rather alarmed by this. He's like, "What's happening? I can't control myself. I'm icing up. But this is crazy. I'm freezing. The cold. I can't stand it. Stop. Stop it, whatever you're doing. Stop. Aye!" Loki has this giant sort of freeze gun thing that Iceman is feeding all of his mutant power into. And Loki is saying,
"Excellent. The condenser is holding the charge perfectly. And when the concentrated blast of nearly absolute zero cold is expelled in the proper direction, the stage will be set."
And he's firing the sort of cold ray with a scream into Jotunheim. And we see that the giants are standing there as this cold ray hits, and they suddenly begin to grow. Yes, and they're getting growing bigger and bigger and bigger. One of the guys is like, cold, more cold.
Never have I felt so strong, so full of power.
Asgard shall yet be ours.
And they're getting growing really, really quickly taller than the trees. So we then shift scenes again, and we are elsewhere in Asgard now, and we are with Fandral and Hogun and Sif. And remember, they had kidnapped the two twin human boys from the House of Volstagg, and they fed them the magical apples. And now they're kind of trying to teach them to fight a little bit, how to defend themselves and not get hurt and ripped up by the Asgardian children so much. And Sif is like, watch carefully now, little warriors, for the hand is truly quicker than the eye.
Are they going to kill each other, Sif?
Nay, Kevin, says Fandral, this is warrior's play, not warrior's work. Friend Hogun here is about to learn why the elusive Fandral is known throughout the Nine Worlds as Fandral the Dashing.
And Hogun grabs Fandral and does like a judo throw and like lands on his ass. It's like,
mayhap, friend Fandral, 'tis the dashing of Fandral's tongue which hath and earned him that sobriquet.
Oh my.
Certainly not his skills as a wrestler.
And Fandral's like, oof. And the kids are like,
wow, I didn't even see him move. Do it again, Hogun. That was neat.
And Sim's like, peace, little ones. The seat of Fandral shall be standing for some days to come as it is.
Wah, 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 wah. That was neat, Hogun. But what good will it do us? We're just ordinary kids, and Volstagg's kids are still tougher than we are. We're never going to be able to fit in here, no matter how nice everybody is.
Listen to me, little warriors. Though you are born of Midgard, yet shall you walk in Asgard tall as any god. Already you have partaken of the apples from the Tree of Life, and they shall make you strong. But a greater gift shall I give thee both. Though one must possess skill to best Fandral, as I have done, the skill is the least of talents. Such power as you have seen is power of the mind and of the heart. To you, Kevin, and to you, Mick, I give the gift of faith. 'Tis truly said on earth that faith can move mountains. I will be your mountain, and in the end, you will move me.
Oh my. That, I think that deserves a drink. And Sif is checking on Fandral in the meantime, and Fandral's leaning up against a tree, and he doesn't look quite well. And Sif is like, Fandral, what ails thee? Surely Hogan's faith hath not done thee a true injury.
Surely not, m'lady. Yet suddenly the brow of Fandral is bathed with sweat, and my limbs do tremble.
We have not bested Hogun, but I find I share Fandral's weakness. I can barely move. We had best return to Asgard quickly.
And Hogun notices what's going on here. He's like, witty stiff. And we then ship back to Earth, where Grendel is fighting with Thor, and Grendel is kind of getting the better of him here. And have a kathram, and he smacks Thor back with his war mace, his big pink knobby war mace, yep. And Thor is like,
again, I have rolled with the blow and avoided the worst of Grendel's attack, but my body betrays me, and I can no longer elude him.
And Grendel's like, farewell, Thunder God. You are scarcely a shadow of the fierce warrior I expected. Let the fires of the furnace put an end to the charade.
And Thor's like, a shadow I may be, Grendel, but even a shadow may have substance. And he kicks Grendel right in the face.
And Grendel's like, gag! And Thor is able to get away. And he's like, thinking to himself, free, but there's no time to lose. I must win clear of the foundry and escape with the armor I have forged while there is time. And he tries to get away, but he's swarmed by these armored dudes, the dark elf warriors. And he's like, no, the rest of the elvish warriors are upon me.
Even with our numbers, we can barely hold him. So weakened have we become inside this iron prison. He must be slain quickly before he escapes us.
And Grendel's like, then hold him still, warriors, and Grendel shall finish the job.
And he kind of rears back with his hammer thing. He's going to crush Thor. Thor's thinking to himself,
this cannot be. The God of Thunder shall not be pinned by his enemies and slaughtered like a lamb.
And he tries to get away and twists around. He's going, grrr! Bang! And the elves go flying. But Grendel's hammer struck Thor on the leg and shattered his leg. And that's so not really good here for Thor. And Grendel is kind of rearing up and kind of facing Thor down. It looks like he's going to try to do a killing blow, something like that. It's like, give up, Thor, for the battle is over. I felt your leg break beneath my blow. Where will you run to now, little godling? And we see that Mjolnir is behind Grendel on the floor. And Thor's like, Arg, Mjolnir, to me, quickly. So remember way, way back, this was early on, I actually had wondered if Thor was able to do that, if he was able to draw his hammer to him, if that was one of the powers he had. And we had a comment on this topic from J.R. Shearer. I believe that's who it was. And I wonder whatever happened to J.R. Shearer. He used to listen to the show. I don't know if he still does. Hey, J.R., if you're still out there, let us know. Anyway, he summons the hammer to him, and with a whoosh, the hammer comes flying towards Thor, and it strikes Grendel from behind. And with a brang, and Grendel's not doing too well after this, and Thor's like, though I should perish 1,000 times, monster, I will never surrender to mine enemies. If this truly be Thor's final battle, then let the Skalds forever say that though his body failed him in the end, his fighting heart spurned the very thought of defeat. And he strikes at Grendel with a skrook, and Grendel's going, roar! And, he's actually impaled him on, like, an iron bar. And Grendel's like, the terrible iron burns within my guts! Woe to me, whose own mother forbade his death, though he was fated to die in ancient days. She wove about me her magics, that I might withstand the touch of iron. Yet no one escapes his weird, and finally my hour is come! But I shall not go down to hell alone. And armies is swarming Thor, and they're holding him down now. And even though Grendel has this, you know, stake or whatever driven through him, hold him, warriors, for his body hath failed him at last. And this time the war club of Grendel shall not be denied. You know, his war club, his big pink knobby war club. Anyway. Grendel's like, what say you, Thor? Will you not ease your final hour and plead for your life before I send you into Valhalla forever? Nay, Grendel, the true son of Odin hath found his peace at last, and thanks to Hela, you will find that I am much more difficult to kill than thee. Never have I fought a more worthy opponent. I salute you, son of Odin.
The dark elves of Svartalfheim salute you, son of Odin. Now die!
And they're all kind of going at him with spears. We then shift scenes back to Asgard and Loki's castle, and Loki is watching on his cosmic voyeuroscope and kind of, you know, just seeing what's going on here.
Saying, you have so little imagination, Thor, to be so brave to the bitter end. How fortunate for Loki that he had decided to review your situation while the giants regain their former glory. I really must credit Hela with more wit than I ever suspected. Her charming gift hath rendered Thor powerless, and sooner than I dreamed possible. So your fighting heart hath forsworn the meaning of defeat and found its peace at last, has it? Then this shall be Loki's final challenge, to wrest from thy broken lips the cry, Hold! Enough! And though you may never die, within the walls of Loki's fortress, the time will come when you shall beg my favor and plead thy suit with Hela. I shall activate the machineries of the gods, and the deed is done. Let the hospitality of Loki entertain his stepbrother until the end of time. And
he does this sort of a spell with a Vazasp. And shoots a magical bolt into his voyeuroscope, and all of a sudden this glowing gold sphere pops up around Thor, protecting him. And the dark elves are like, what? I cannot hold my grip. Is this some trick of Thor's? Quickly, shatter the spheroid. And they can't do it, and it disappears with a grrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr
escaped the vengeance of the Dark Elves.
And Grendel's like, Thor! And we shift back to Loki, where the sphere containing Thor appears in his throne room.
And he says, "There the prodigal returns. Welcome, Thor, to your home away from home."
And Thor's just laying there, you know, because I think he's unconscious or something. And Loki shatters the spheroid with a brock.
Brock. "But I see the strenuous journey through the cosmic storms between here and Midgard hath taken their toll. No matter. A refreshing sleep now, and a gentle awakening tomorrow. Pleasant dreams, Thor. They may be the last thou shalt ever have."
And Loki goes into his mad scientist's lair to check on Iceman, who is still iced up and still projecting lots and lots of super cold, because that's what Iceman does.
"And what of my other guest? How fare you, Robert Drake? Unconscious, I see, but alive, and still radiating cold. Thy power is greater than I guessed. But the frost giants will have no cause to complain, I suspect. False eyes and growing, 'twould seem."
And he's kind of watching them on a little TV screen.
"Excellent. Thy task is finished, Drake. 'Tis time to stop my engine."
And he goes to turn off, you know, the engines that are causing the giants to get bigger. But the giants are surging forward into Loki's realm, and they're kind of hammering through the doors of his castle.
"The cold has ceased to flow from Loki's castle.
It can only be Loki's doing.
We must have more. And follow me, giants.
No one can take from us what is our right.
The source of such power shall be ours."
And they, "Death to Loki!" And they go crashing into his castle.
And Loki's like, "What's this? Those brainless cretins seek to lift their hands against the one who gave them back their power? How dare they?"
And he casts a spell and he changes into his fancy, like, combat armor sort of costume thing. A little bit different from the costume that he was in that Simonson designed. This one is a more very Salbusema-ish design. And I have to say, for the most part, I think it looks pretty cool. And Loki's like,
"I will greet them at the door as they deserve. Loki is no powerless charlatan to bend his knees before a handful of ungrateful wretches. Cold indeed. The very fury of my anger will freeze them in their tracks."
And they are bursting through the door, and we see the giants have gotten incredibly large. I mean, you know, way, 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 way bigger than they were before.
"The cold! We must have the cold! Death to Loki! Grind Asgard into dust!"
By the beard of Odin, they have grown large.
And we have next issue's blurb, "When Loki Stood Alone." And that is Thor number 377. All right, so I do have a few things I want to say about this issue. By and large, it's pretty much just a continuation of the story. A lot of it is just fighting. And of course, that's not the most exciting thing to talk about on the show. Because, again, you know, you just have a fight. You have a lot of battle going on, not a lot of real story development. It seems like Loki's plans now are coming to fruition, and he's got the sort of multi-pronged attack. First, he's got the giants, who are now getting more and more powerful, and they're coming to destroy Asgard. At the same time, we have this evil curse, or whatever it is, that Loki brewed up last issue, and is now appears to be making the gods sick. And so we have some of these various plot threads that are starting to come together. Now, it is all going to kind of come to a head and end in Thor number 382. And this is kind of sort of the build to it. So I think the build is going really well. Like I said, I like Simonson's writing under the best of circumstances. I think he's a very good plotter. He's definitely got a good story sense. Again, I'm not really fond of the art in this. And especially in this issue, I find that some of the artwork is particularly weak. And I think most notably the opening sequence, where we have the explosions that are happening in Faerie. Now, one of the problems that I have with this opening sequence, you have these portals to Earth that are being destroyed, and they're throwing the elves around. You kind of think that the elves are acting out of their own self-interest, because Thor is destroying them. And I don't know if I would have portrayed it quite that way, because I actually kind of feel sorry for the elves, and Thor seems like just kind of an ass. I don't think that's really what Simonson had in mind. And maybe that could have been dealt with a little bit better as far as showing the effects of Thor's work. I fail to see why Thor making some armor, even if it's made of Asgardian steel, is going to affect the gateways to Faerie. That just doesn't make sense to me. That's not explained very well. So that would be, if I were to talk to Walt Simonson, that would be my question to him. It's like, how does this make any sense? Why could not this have been handled a little bit differently? Now, the other thing that I don't like about this plot, now I understand the whole idea of Loki trying to make the giants bigger again. They have, you know, he's going to pour, you know, cold into Jotunheim to reverse Baldur's magical fire, you know, that he melted them all down and made shrinky dinks out of them. And he's just going to reverse that by just making it really cold, and then they're just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I guess you can explain that by, it's kind of saying that they're magic, and it has to be magic cold. So why would he not use something like, say, oh, you know, the Casket of Ancient Winters? Because surely that would make more sense than going to Earth, kidnapping Iceman, who's immortal, even though he's a mutant and he has some pretty impressive mutant powers. Why would that be Loki's go-to for a way to generate cold when we've seen the power of the Casket of Ancient Winters? Plus, by using the casket, it would take Simonson's story full circle. It would go back to where we started in Simonson's run. And it would close this open plot. So I don't understand why he didn't do it that way. Now, I understand. Simonson was writing X-Factor, so he can use the characters. Now, I'm wondering, and I'm probably right about this, but I'm wondering if sales had actually dipped so low on Thor that he needed to show X-Men in the issue in order to get the sales to go up. I hate to be that cynical, but it does seem like a marketing decision rather than one that makes sense according to the story. Like I said, he's already got a much better cold generator that he's introduced into Thor's universe than Iceman, of all people. Now, we're going to see more of Iceman next issue. I like the character of Iceman. I'm not one of these Iceman haters. I realize that there's a lot of people out there who think he's kind of a silly character. And you know what? A lot of superheroes are silly characters, but I really don't care. I do like Iceman as a character. And I think that using him in the Thor issue would be fine if it didn't make much more sense to do this a different way. But anyway, yeah, again, I think probably this was done for sales value rather than story value. All right, so with that, it is time to wrap up the show for this week. Thanks very, very much for listening, folks. I really do appreciate it. And even though we don't get a lot of feedback on the show, I do see the download numbers, and I do see that people are out there listening, and I hope enjoying the show. And if you do enjoy the show, please feel free to recommend it to your friends. Join the Facebook group. You can contact us there. We'll be happy to chat with you. It's a friendly bunch. You should come join us there. And of course, you can email the show if you just have comments, questions, suggestions. And you can email the show at radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. Next week, we have a Norse myth, folks. Yeah, it's that time again. And maybe some other feature that I have not yet started working on. Anyway, thanks very, very much for listening once again. And we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.